From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. If you thought that President Donald Trump's appointment of Judge Amy Coney Barrett was a threat to reproductive rights in the U.S. alone, a new investigation reveals that Barrett's positioning on the U.S. Supreme Court is part of a larger and extremely insidious global agenda. That agenda is aimed at women, LGBTQ people, and more. OpenDemocracy.net has just published and analyzed the first ever data set revealing the global scale of U.S. Christian right groups and how they're funding anti-abortion movements all over the world. These groups are intimately linked to people in Trump's orbit. Joining me to help explain this reporting is Nandini Archer. She is the Global Commissioning Editor at OpenDemocracy.net. She covers stories relating to gender, sexuality, feminism, and social justice. She's also an active member of the feminist direct action group Sisters Uncut, and she previously worked with the International Campaign for Women's Right to Safe Abortion. Welcome to the program, Nandini.
Thank you for having me.
So it seems as though this reporting links up to apparently disparate issues, which is Amy Coney Barrett on the U.S. Supreme Court and abortion issues in Poland, where the access to abortion was just made illegal and women in Poland are protesting in the streets. How are those two things linked through this network of Christian right groups based in the U.S.?
Yeah, so it's all really part of this kind of global Christian right machinery. I think with Amy Coney Barrett's nomination, what I've heard a lot in the UK about what commentators are saying in the US is that this kind of changes the US judicial system for a very long time, and that the impact of Trump is basically here to stay, whether or not he wins or loses next week. Yeah, I think that what we've basically shown in this new investigation that we published this week is that, again, kind of that this is all part of a global coordinated attack on women's and LGBTQ rights. It's not just Barrett, it's not just Trump, it's not just these kind of boogeymen and women individuals. This is a whole system, a coordinated and globalized force. And I know that your president likes to talk about himself a lot, and make it seem in some ways that he is at the forefront of these issues, and of course he is their leader at the moment. But our new investigation has basically revealed that there's this global empire of $280 million of dark money that is flowing around the world. Many of the groups that we looked at are indeed linked to Trump. So one of them is actually Jay Sekulow's group. So yes, whether or not Trump wins in the election, these US Christian right dark money groups are ultimately here to stay and they're not going anywhere. And if anything, I'd argue that if Trump does lose, these groups may be more likely to ramp up their game elsewhere. And we've seen this before. They seek to find new presidents in Poland, in Italy, in Uganda, wherever they can exert their influence, really.
Let's talk about Jay Sekulow. He's Trump's personal lawyer. Who is he and how is he linked to some of these efforts in outside the United States that are pushing this anti-abortion agenda?
Yeah, so Jay Sekulow leads this group called the American Center for Law and Justice. And they were one of the kind of 28 groups that we looked at in this huge global data set investigation. One of the things that this group does is kind of involve themselves in legal proceedings around the world. And one of the most recent court cases, which we've obviously has been in the news a lot recently, has been the Polish case. So yeah, that's what they do. I think that what is kind of, you know, I've been watching what's been happening in Poland and kind of hooked on those videos and watching the feminists on the streets being really brave. And I think what's even more scary than those riot police vans and far right groups and military police opposing these women's reproductive rights and fighting them on the streets, really, is the fact that this is not just a Polish story. These kind of lawyers in the US have a influence there as well, which is what's really scary.
So just to give some backstory for our audience, it's now almost a week since thousands of women in Poland have been protesting after that nation's top court basically banned nearly all abortions across Poland. So women have been speaking out, they've been protesting, they've been facing repression, women and their allies, we should mention. So how specifically, is it that there are the groups like J Secular's group, the ACLJ, are giving money to help fund anti-abortion efforts in Poland? They're sort of sister organizations in Poland, if you will?
Yeah, so last week, Secular's group, the European branch, intervened actually directly.
Oh, so they have a European branch,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, called the European Center for Law and Justice. Hmm. And they actually intervened directly in the Polish constitutional court case last week that effectively banned abortion. They submitted arguments in support for banning abortion in cases of fatal fetal anomalies. And then these abortion cases already, they made up the vast majority of legal abortions in Poland, because Poland already had one of Europe's most restrictive abortion laws. So it has effectively outlawed abortion. And yes, as you say, this has triggered days and days of protests that have really captured the world's attention. But I think, yeah, what's really scary is that these US groups are kind of experts at copy and pasting strategies against women's rights in one country to another. So even their Polish court filing was in fact copy and pasted from a previous anti-abortion submission they made to the United Nations Committee back in 2017. And so it's really quite bizarre that women's rights in Poland have come into the crosshairs of this one US Christian conservative legal army that's connected to Trump.
And Amy Coney Barrett's positioning on the Supreme Court as well.
Yes, exactly.
Which is to say that her positioning in the Supreme Court, her appointment and confirmation, is intended to bring about in the United States what Poland is going through, I imagine. I mean, you know, literally it was Poland's Supreme Court that banned abortion.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, these lawyers have said quite openly that they seek to find precedents in Europe and paste them onto America or the other way around. Hmm. I think that they say that they're really something quite explicit, like they're fighting against bad European precedents because they don't want them to spread into America. So there really is this this kind of cross-border effort, and they're quite explicit about that. I think what's really worrying and what we've seen in the rest of the world is that when these groups are not doing well in the US or not winning precedents or not kind of succeeding in their kind of ultra-conservative efforts, they tend to then try elsewhere. And so my colleague in Uganda has been looking at what these groups have been doing.
Right. In fact, in African nations and Latin American nations, these groups have worked for years spending money to undermine access to contraception, undermine access to abortion, etc. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So my colleagues in Uganda and South Africa have looked at these groups spending in that region, and they've funded things like kind of crisis pregnancy centers, which ultimately try and dissuade women from having abortions.
Right. In fact, if anybody wants to get a look inside a crisis abortion center, a really interesting place to start would be Borat's new film, which actually has a scene in a crisis pregnancy center. Not kid friendly, I should add.
Yes, well, I watched that recently, actually, and I was very surprised at the kind of how much that mirrored what we saw in other countries around the world. Earlier this year, we did an investigation across 18 countries where we sent undercover journalists into these centres across Uganda, from Uganda to Costa Rica to Italy and elsewhere, posing as young vulnerable women. And actually, the things that they were told in all these different countries were remarkably similar. Things like, if you have an abortion, you could be, what if you're killing the future president? Like, things like that. So it's
We've also heard that women are told that they're more susceptible to breast cancer if they get an abortion, all sorts of things. So the other misinformation that your investigation at opendemocracy.net points out is that some of these same groups that are funding through dark money networks, anti-abortion movements around the world, are also spreading in misinformation on the coronavirus. Tell me about that.
Yeah, exactly. So in Latin America in particular, we found about half a dozen US Christian right groups who had poured millions of dollars into the region. And they had also promoted a lot of misinformation about COVID-19. And one group, for example, called it like the most monumental social engineering project of all time. They, of course, claimed that it was, you know, man-made in a Chinese lab and so on. They also kind of, we found a group that was spreading misinformation specifically about the WHO and saying that the WHO was using COVID-19 as a means to spread abortion or something. So really quite interesting, wild claims. And I think what's interesting is that the kind of abortion misinformation crisis pregnancy center investigation that I mentioned that we did earlier this year. We did that in kind of January, February, before this coronavirus crisis. And actually what that shows is that we found health misinformation against women on this kind of global scale was already, you know, it was happening then. And now kind of coronavirus has hit the news and so much has happened in the past like 6+ months that these groups are now kind of like focusing on that as their kind of health misinformation angle and somehow connecting it to abortion.
We know here in the United States, in fundamentalist circles, misogyny and homophobia go hand in hand. Do these same groups that are pushing to end access to abortion also push homophobic anti-LGBTQ policies?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think that they have ultimately a very very strict worldview of what they perceive a man and a woman and marriage and so on should be. And all of the activities we've looked into are very much around kind of sex education, transgender rights, even divorce in some cases, also like IVF and surrogacy, anything really that steps outside of that kind of like woman plus man marriage 2.5 kids or something. The things in particular that my colleague was looking into in Africa, it's just like extremely frightening that the alongside these like crisis pregnancy centers, they're also supporting individuals who have said the most vitriolic homophobic stuff, like, you know, actually advocating for murdering LGBTIQ people. And again, I think we spoke to quite a few interesting kind of prominent LGBT activists in Uganda in particular, who say that this is a form of kind of imperialism. And again, basically, these groups, they failed in their countries, so they're kind of exporting their hate elsewhere.
We talked about some about J. Sekulo's organization, the ICLJ. There's another organization that opendemocracy.net in your investigation is looking at, and that's the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, which has spent millions of dollars in Europe. Tell me about this organization and what damage it's been wreaking in your country, in the UK.
Yeah, so the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association is an interesting one, and we found that they spent $23 million in Europe between 2007 and 2014. But interestingly, they then kind of re-registered as a church association, so they no longer had to file these financial filings, meaning they probably spent much, much more money in the region, and we just don't know about it. In the UK, they've been up to quite... this year, quite interesting stuff. So they were meant to do a tour of the UK, and actually this tour probably would have, I mean, almost definitely would have been cancelled because of coronavirus. The tour was meant to be between May and October. But what happened was that various venues actually decided to pull out of this tour because they said, because of basically Franklin Graham, who is the son of televangelist Billy Graham, is kind of well known for his kind of hatred and vitriol, and he's called Islam evil, and I think the religion of Satan, and lots of, you know, extremely homophobic, Islamophobic stuff. And so these venues pulled out, and now Billy Graham is, Billy Graham's Evangelistic Association has decided to sue these venues, but also local councils. And for me, being based in the UK, when I heard this and when I found this through this investigation, I have to say I was extremely shocked, you know, just knowing how overstretched councils and businesses are right now in the coronavirus crisis. The idea that this big kind of American Christian right group is suing them is just kind of absolute madness. And I think, again, what's really scary about this is the use of, they're using kind of American style, you know, freedom of religion, freedom of speech arguments. And the kind of LGBT rights activists that we spoke to here were saying, again, that's really scary because it's, you know, they're kind of putting, they're using their kind of religious beliefs as an excuse, basically, to discriminate against LGBT people.
Here in the United States, a prominent case a few years back was the Colorado baker who refused to bake a cake for a same-sex couple's wedding. And that became, and of course, this became, it became the sort of poster child for right-wing Christian groups here in the U.S., and they took that all the way to the Supreme Court. Are you seeing echoes of that in Europe as well? You know, you were just saying that they're trying to use the same tactics, the same models, same arguments in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. And what's really interesting about that case, so there was a very similar case about a year ago in Northern Ireland in the UK, where a kind of U.S. Christian right group was kind of arguing that these bakers shouldn't have to bake a cake with a kind of gay marriage slogan on it or something. And actually, at the time when me and my team came across this case, we weren't certain that the US Christian right group were involved, but it smelt like it because it was such a similar case to what was happening in the US. And it has now kind of transpired a year later that they've kind of like announced and spoken about it on their website more. And also, I think that this case is going to the European Court of Human Rights. So yeah, that's exactly like a really clear example of something that's happening on both sides of the Atlantic.
So this money that your organization, that your outlet opendemocracy.net tracked, how many groups are we talking about? What's the scale of the money? And you know, what are the sort of things that it can buy? I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars is a lot of money, but it's spread out across continents and across decades. Is it really that big an influence?
Yeah, I think that, this is the first data set which kind of reveals the huge kind of global scale of these groups. I do think the number is huge, but I do also think it's like the tip of an iceberg. We kind of worked on a similar investigation last year ahead of the European elections, and it looked at 10 groups specifically in Europe. And so this one is this investigation is much bigger in scale. I think a really important point is that we took these kind of findings to a lot of transparency experts and NGOs and women's rights groups. I think the fact that one of the women I spoke to who works at the Association of Women's Rights and Development, one of the things she said really stuck with me. She was saying how often these groups will talk about how women's and LGBTIQ rights agendas are kind of like meddling in other countries, and they'll constantly like name drop Soros, but actually this new research shows that the money that these US Christian right groups are working with is just absolutely staggering compared to what most feminist and other human rights groups are working with across the world. I think...
And where is it coming from? I mean, do we have any sense of, you know, are they fundraising this from churches in the US? Are there evangelical billionaires donating to it? Do we know?
That's a really important question. And actually, the truth is we don't know. Mm. And that was one point that came through very strongly in this investigation, was the financial secrecy and the lack of transparency of these groups. And that's why we've called it dark money. We don't actually know where this money is coming from. Some groups have filed some information in kind of their IRS records, but they don't really disclose who their donors are. And we don't really know what this money is being spent on, other than the fact that these groups are so involved in legal cases and judicial processes around the world and trying to shape public opinion in these culture wars. And I think that's why it is such a huge problem, you know, and that's why it is what we call dark money. And actually, one of these groups, Alliance Defending Freedom, specifically went to the US Supreme Court last year to defend nonprofit donor secrecy. And that case is still ongoing, so I'm not sure what the outcome will be.
But, I mean, yeah. It's amazing. We're discussing this, and if we didn't have that data and the documentation on the surface, it sounds like this insidious global conspiracy, you know, of the kind that right-wing groups like to say is happening all along by left-wing groups. But this is a vast network. This is happening. It's happening under cover of darkness, but it's documented. It's real. There is a common global agenda. I mean, as I'm saying these words, I feel like I'm, you know, echoing some of the same fears that conspiracy theorists echo. But this is real.
Yeah, it's completely real. And I think actually it's a really important point, in that a lot of the time these groups will try and make out that things like women's abortion rights or transgender rights or various different issues are just kind of everyday, you know, normal people are very concerned about this, or these are like local parents' campaigns concerned about LGBT rights and sex education or something. But actually what this research and investigation shows is that this is all part of a kind of global coordinated attack on women's and LGBTIQ rights. And we all have to be very careful. I think that's why we're all over the world kind of like watching these elections in the US so carefully, because it does, what happens there really does impact.
Right. In fact, that was literally going to be my next question to you, which is, what are the stakes for the world when it comes to the November 3rd race in the US? Is the re-election of Donald Trump seen as a test case for whether these Christian-funded agendas, including putting people in positions of power, whether or not it will hold or whether it can be defeated? It seems as though the election means so much, not just for all Americans, but for many other countries as well.
Yeah, completely. And I do think that, I mean, I think it is important to note that, like, this investigation shows that these kind of the dark money kind of groups that helped get Donald Trump into power and have celebrated him while he's been in power have existed before, but they certainly have been emboldened under him. But they will continue to exist after he's, you know, if he is defeated next week. And so we all have to stay very alert. But the point is if he does lose the election, they will have lost their leader, you know, so they will have taken a punch in the gut.
So finally, let me also ask you whether you think that this particular trend that we're seeing globally has legs, because whether it is really seen as a reaction to women, to girls around the world becoming more aware of their rights, getting better access to education, realizing that there's more to life than having kids, choosing some of them to not have children, choosing to have abortions if they find that it's the wrong time for them to get pregnant, choosing to be in charge of their own sexuality, rejecting the church and Christianity. Does all of what you're seeing feel to you like a backlash to feminism?
Yeah, completely. I think that a lot of these groups really kind of, it's totally a backlash to women's and LGBTIQ rights. It is a backlash, which means that we should always remember that that means in the first place there's been so many wins. And I think, you know, I'm constantly thinking about the women in Poland at the moment and how brave they're being, and you know, marching on the streets and calling that nationwide women's strike. I think that, of course, it's totally a backlash. And part of what we try to do on this project, which is called Tracking the Backlash, we are a team of feminist investigative journalists. And importantly, we investigate issues relating to women's and LGBTIQ rights in with the same kind of attention to detail and importance, places as much importance on those rights as other journalists would on kind of climate issues or tax laws or other things. So it's like, I think overall, I'm still feeling optimistic. Working on this investigation has been absolutely wonderful in the sense of it's been a great collaborative project between feminists, and working on these issues because it does affect our lives and our rights all over the world.
So the study itself is a testament to what women can do and will keep doing to protect our rights. Nandini, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll post a link to the articles the women discussing at opendemocracy.net from our website as well. My guest has been Nandini Archer. She's the global commissioning editor at opendemocracy.net, covering stories related to gender, sexuality, feminism, and social justice. She's also an active member of the feminist direct action group Sisters Uncut. She previously worked with the international campaign for women's right to safe abortion. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you so much.